All right. Thank you, Guy, and thank you, Nadia, for inviting me to moderate this panel. Diversity and inclusion is a really a central part of my life and what I believe in growing and improving, not only in women in tech, but in the entertainment industry and heck, the whole world. For myself, it's important because I am of the LGBTQ community. I identify as female. And so it's personal in that I'm also part of a two-mom family with an eight-year-old daughter, and I want the world to be a place, a better place for her when she goes into school, goes into college, and goes into her career. So it's personal for me in that sense. And so today with this panel, what we really wanted to talk about is building high-performing teams. It really isn't just about the people that we hire and the talent that we bring in. It's about the inclusive workplace that we create for them and the diversity of the team, and thinking about really what does diversity look like, which is in many forms. It's not just gender, it's not ethnicity, it's are you a parent? What is your orientation? It comes in so many forms, and so the more that we are able to broadly think about that, the more we broaden our teams. And you've heard great examples of, as for us in this industry, when we're trying to build a global platform or a global product, something, content that resonates around the world, the people who are making that content, who are helping distribute that content, need to reflect the world around us. So with that, I would love for our panelists each to take a turn in introducing themselves, but also as part of the introduction to share what was that moment that was your call to action to be an active advocate for diversity and inclusion. So we can start with you, Christy.
Hi, well, thank you so much for having me. I'm Christy Karandikar, Senior Vice President of Talent Acquisition, Engagement, and Development at Warner Brothers. Very proud of Susan Chang, I just have to say. Thank you. Congratulations. For me, the moment, it goes back to, I grew up here in Los Angeles. I was raised primarily by my father, who was a very strong senior executive in his own right. And quite frankly, I think as I was growing up, I was just told, you know, you can do whatever you want to do. And so there was that instilled me in me that I didn't know, I didn't see that difference, I didn't see anything was there, and it was just programmed deeply in me that I can do anything. And I ended up going to college back east, an undergrad, to a small school called Babson College, which is focused on business and entrepreneurship. And my freshman year class was 71% male and mostly white men. And it was a team-based environment where you did a lot of work, and it was not abnormal in any way to be the only woman working in a work group or have working groups that were make up of only men. And, you know, just looking around me, I'm like, this doesn't actually feel right. Like, there's something kind of off about this. And as I progressed in my career, I ended up going into consulting. I worked at Accenture, and at some point I was a senior manager about to make partner, and one of my very senior partners came to me and said, you know, I want to build a senior management leadership program for women to get into the partnership. And I was like, why just for women? Like, it kind of made me mad. Why are we doing this just for women? And he said, well, I have a business problem. He's like, I'm losing deals. I'm missing out on deals because I bring a group of men into these rooms, and the makeup of the leadership teams of these clients are not all men, and they're not interested in just working with us because we're all men, and we have a business challenge to deal with here, and I have an obligation to get more women into the partnership, and you're going to help me. And it was a real call to action, and the first time I realized, like, wow, this is compelling, and this is important, and this is something that we need to do every day.
I'm Mekon Shelton, and I'm from Fox. Congratulations to Sybil. I'm just so proud to be here with so many fabulous Fox executives. I see them in the crowd, and this is a moment right now that makes me feel so proud to be working in diversity and inclusion. But I will say that it has been an evolution, because I grew up and came to America in the 70s where I was told to conform and to really downplay my differences. And, you know, in all that infinite wisdom, I got a perm and I did as much as I could to be like as American as I could be and just fit in and just blend in. And then in my adulthood, you know, I met more people, and I did what I never did growing up. I mean, we were kind of on emotional lockdown as a family growing up, and it might be a cultural thing, but we didn't talk about our insecurities. I didn't talk about my fears in, you know, at all. So then when I got into the a professional environment where I thought those insecurities were my own, and I started sharing, you know, and talking with my friends and hearing that there are a lot of common themes that plague different people. And I felt more and more emboldened to explore those conversations, the more my own community of supporters and allies and mentors grew. And I count now among them the groups like Women at 21st Century Fox and Women in Technology that was founded by Sybil and Alex and so many women in this room who are my constant inspiration. And it's those moments every day that I have now where I look at the statistics and I talk to people that I'm re-energized to work in diversity, like on a daily basis.
Hi, everyone. My name is Anita Ngo. I am the VP of Talent Acquisition and Diversity and Inclusion at Lionsgate. I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for having me. Same sort of thought I had was I've been working in recruiting and talent acquisition for the past 14, 15 years. And I'm sure as it can resonate in this room, I mean, think how hard it is to find female engineers, right? And when you finally find one for your open spot, how exciting is it? And you get them in the door, great. Then what? And I've just seen countless times over the years, amazing talent that we've, you know, at all different companies I've worked at that we've brought in and have left for various reasons that, you know, sometimes quite frankly can be easily solved if someone's just kind of focused on educating and bringing awareness to the company. So in my day-to-day, I'm constantly focused on it. I'm really lucky at Lionsgate to have the chance to have this opportunity. That's it.
Okay. Hi, everyone. In case you haven't figured it out, I'm Paul Martin. I'm the one male up here on this wonderful panel, and I apologize for being late, but I had to give actually Susan Chang a hug because we go back. When I was first at Warner Brothers for about a year, it took us a while to get her over here, and just to watch her receive this award, I just couldn't have felt more proud to even just know her or be part of some small part of, you know, all the accomplishments that she had. So with that, I just want to take 30 seconds to apologize for being late. As for me, my career started in talent acquisition. It slowly migrated into diversity and inclusion, and I think the big moment was the fact that when I first started at Merrill Lynch as a recruiter, I literally was in my boss's office, and he says, "We have a diversity problem, and I need you to figure this out." So being the only African-American in the department, I kind of sat in my office and just said, "Oh shit, I guess I got to figure this out." So, you know, since then, it's just been a journey of learning, and I can easily say I haven't figured it out, but the journey in and of itself, I've learned something new each and every day. And obviously, all of us in this room realize this is a very, very complex issue. There isn't one simple solution. But I think, you know, together, as we continue to listen, as we continue to kind of learn from each other, we are going to continue to make significant impact in this space. So.
Yes, I don't want to keep it coming. Okay. So just to give you guys kind of a quick, there will be a bit of an ask that we will give to you at the end of this panel, which is, I want you listening closely to what were those calls of actions, also as this panel speaks about the different things that they're doing, whether from a personal point of view or from an organization point of view, to improve diversity and inclusion, and think, what can you take back to your workplace or even to your personal life and make that what might seem like a small act but have a big impact? So I just say that so you're listening closely. Okay. Christy, often we see companies focus on diversity because it can generate a much more tangible result. We can say, look, here's the data on our diversity. We hired, we improved it, not to downplay the meaningfulness of that. But what about inclusion? How do you measure that? And what do you do to define, well, one, how do you define it, and then how do you measure it?
So defining inclusion is really tough, and I will take inspiration from an incredible leader and speaker, Vernay Myers, who we brought out to the studio last year and just inspired our masses and really just groundswell of like getting us really focused on this as an organization. But she defines, you know, diversity is about being invited to the party, and inclusion is about being asked to dance. And the way I take that is it's a real genuine sense of belonging. And measuring something like a sense of belonging is really tough, hence the question. I think it's a great question. And I think, you know, for us, it's about really understanding how comfortable is somebody voicing their opinions, suggesting something that might be alternative, voicing their values, their perspectives in a way that they truly feel is valued. How much are they able to bring their whole selves to work? And what does that really mean? You know, can they authentically be who they are? Or are they working so hard every day, that mental capacity just to fit in, or code switching? And, you know, what's not okay for us is that we want our employees and our executives bringing their entire selves to work and contributing their entire selves to work, not spending mental energy just trying to figure it out and trying to fit in. And which I'm sure everyone in this room, we've got our culture surveys, engagement surveys, and we look at every which way possible to try to measure the things that I just outlined. But what was really meaningful for us is that we did a series of focus groups last year, specifically targeting D&I and diversity inclusion, and really rallied people to tell the truth. You know, one of the things Mo said to us earlier that was inspiring is that the truth will set you free. For me, being a change practitioner my entire career, no change occurs without strong truth telling, and you gotta, you know, ask the question in a meaningful way in which you're gonna get the responses back. And we really had to understand, where are we strong and where are our gaps, and how do we relentlessly go in there and challenge ourselves to ask the hard questions and to resolve things in a meaningful way.
Anita. Christy was talking about focus groups, and really, you know, part of the outcome of that is the data that we seek to better understand how people are feeling, which seems kind of counterintuitive, but often those are the signals that we at least start with. How has Lionsgate approached diversity, and especially in terms of how they've used data to help identify the opportunities? And then what have been some of the tangible results?
Sure. So Lionsgate launched our employee resource groups about a year ago. It was April last year, just a little over a year. We launched four. It was really exciting for the company. We have a women's group, we've got a multicultural group, a veterans group, and an LGBTQ group. One focus that I have is obviously inclusion at the company. And another major focus, after looking over some data of statistics of female executives and at what level do we see a drop-off? I know it happens at every company. I know you are all thinking, you know, seeing the same numbers. So we decided to use and leverage this women's group to really get some true actionable items to help that. So we got together a few of those female executives from different areas of the company. We created an internal working group. And we did a couple surveys, to be honest. So we did some surveys. We surveyed mid-level, senior-level female executives. We surveyed parents, new mothers, new fathers, working mothers and fathers. And we, you know, came back to the table and came up with a few things. So out of that, a few things we did. One, we took a pledge. So came from the top down, the whole entire company now for VP level and above, you know, you must include a female candidate, at least one for those. So that's been a great initiative for us. We took a really hard look. We did an audit of our processes. So audit of recruitment, audit of policies, audit of benefits. How can we really embed inclusion into the company? So our benefits was a great start, and so we took a look there. We increased our parental leave, which is a big win for the company. We had some small wins too, which are great. You know, we were hearing from our female executives that it was really hard to travel as a new mother, given, you know, breastfeeding and traveling with that. And so we now offer a benefit that does that all for them, so they don't have to worry about it, and, you know, they can focus on their day-to-day. So that's been a great one. A few other things. Sorry, when I get nervous, I tend to forget things.
Yeah,
thanks. Yeah, it's been a lot. It's been a lot of fun. And thankfully, it's honestly coming from, I mean, my boss, who's our head of HR, has been a true leader in this area in a really genuine, organic way. So I'm really lucky to be under him. I think that's a few things. This is what I was going to say. Yeah. Another thing we decided to do is, so I oversee recruitment. That's how I started at the company and have grown into this diversity and inclusion role just recently, just as of 6 months ago. So one thing that I've asked the recruiting team to do during these kickoff meetings with hiring managers is show them data, right? That's how you can really understand and see, especially with these business leaders who are busy and they're just really thinking about numbers. So what we're doing now is when we have a kickoff meeting, we have an open position, we are taking the gender and ethnicity numbers of that particular group's department, so not just their little maybe, you know, sub-department, but the broader department, for them to really take a look before they start the search to say, hey, this is what it looks like. Keep that in mind as you're going through the recruitment process. So,
yeah. Mikan, what are actually some of the biggest barriers for a leader in trying to build a diverse team or a company in trying to improve their diversity numbers? And what have been some of the more successful strategies that you've seen?
A few kind of macro barriers, I think, as I look across the diversity landscape, because there's so many I could mention, and they're very specific to, I think, function. They're very specific to, you know, departments and business units. But at a macro level, I think, you know, there's sometimes a scarcity. There's a real scarcity model where, you know, people think that diversity or opening up, you know, opportunities for others means, you know, less opportunity for themselves. And so for us as studios, since we're all studios, we try to draw inspiration from studies that have really shown that everybody could benefit. Like Paul and I were just at the DGA, meeting with the DGA, looking at all the numbers, and there has been a net increase in the number of women directing episodic television. And there has been, you know, a concern that does that mean that it's because, you know, men are getting less work. But so when we look at the numbers, we see the whole pie has grown. There's more television being produced, right? More episodes of television being produced more than ever. And so everybody's working more, and the percentage has grown for women, but the net numbers of jobs for men have grown as well. Right, so when
I appreciate the pie analogy of Wade Davis, who works for the He for She program for UN, said it's not about there not being enough pie; you just make more pie.
I love Wade Davis; right? He's a genius, and so that's a tip for everybody in the room. You should book him; yes. He's very good. And we should think about more pie. And so, you know, I was just reviewing some stats because I kind of knew the audience I'm talking to, so I figure you'd like stats. And the EEOC has shown that there's just been this huge increase in the number of technology jobs in the last 5 years, and yet the percentage of women working in them has decreased. So unlike the director's model where we, you know, more pie for everyone and more jobs for everybody and more percentage, more, you know, of women working in television, somehow in the tech world, we have so many more jobs, and yet in the past 5 years, it's gone from 41% women to 37% women. So there's something there that we should look at very specifically to technology, and I love all the, you know, all the people who are acknowledged who are working on the pipeline, because so much of it must be that, but then it must be what is happening right now with the pipeline that's not being tapped into right now. So I feel like if the barrier is kind of just a fear, which I can understand just anthropologically, like, you know, if people think of diversity as counting numbers, but if we kind of shift our thinking and think about it in terms of inclusion and in terms of thinking about, so not so much the numbers, but even with the numbers, just more pie and more, you know, wealth to, and success and everything else for everybody, then I think that might help too.
Paul, being the male perspective here, you know what I would love to hear from you. What is one small action or heck, even a radical action that you as a male ally could go do tomorrow on behalf of women?
Okay. I would first like to just start off in by just saying one thing. I've been probably in the recruiting and the diversity and inclusion space going on about 25 years. And in those 25 years, I've met a lot of people. And what I've come to find, I have yet to meet an executive who wakes up every morning and says, I can't wait to discriminate against somebody today. So good news is we don't have these evil geniuses running around with, you know, an agenda about purposely suppressing anyone. However, we are where we are. It's just been a natural, consistent, you know, I think culmination of habits. And when we talk about diversity and inclusion, I think way too much emphasis is placed on diversity and not about inclusive behaviors. So in the 25 years, I've also learned that diversity is the natural outcome of consistent inclusive behaviors, okay? And it doesn't necessarily work vice versa. So just because you have a number of diverse heads, or whether it's gender or what have you, you don't necessarily have an inclusive environment. So the first thing I would mention and what I would recommend is, how do we begin to demonstrate, how do we begin to practice inclusive behaviors? And you have to think of this like a muscle. It's going to take some repetition. It's going to take some practice. And there's certain things that you can begin to do. For you in the room who actually manage or lead teams, one little thing that you can do, it may not seem like a big deal, but in terms of really leveraging and exemplifying inclusive behaviors, when you have your team meeting, first and foremost, have any of you ever monitored, if you have an hour long meeting, how much of that hour do you spend directly talking? How much of that time are you giving information? And one of the key things, it's just human nature. I guarantee you, you're not going to learn anything by speaking, because all you're doing is regurgitating something you already know. There's a higher likelihood that you're going to learn something by sitting back and listening. So one of the things I would encourage all of you to do, a very simple thing in terms of practicing inclusive behavior, when you're having a meeting, if you're the leader, speak last. Actively look to speak last. So when there are topics that are being brought up, get the input from your entire team, because the reason being, there are aspects of your team members that you may not know about that may begin to come out. You can have women in the room who may not feel they have a voice. You can have people of different backgrounds who just feel this is not my place to say. You've got to create in that space, you know, an environment where people feel like they have a say and their opinion is valued. And you also have to be cognizant. If you have remote employees, people who are dialing in, acknowledge those individuals constantly. I've been part of meetings where I've called in, and I'm just like, people have left the room. They forgot I was on the phone. Like, I didn't know the meeting was over. Like, but I could hear people leaving. So that's just one small thing, and you would be very surprised how far that can go when you kind of reset the tone of your meeting. As it pertains to diversity, here's one simple thing that you can do. For many of us, we engage contractors. So we may engage contractors in project teams. And for a lot of us, I know that we can say, well, you know, I want to bring in more diverse teams. I don't have openings. How many of you have challenged your vendors in terms of the contractors you bring in or they bring into you? How many of them are women? How many of them are from, you know, different ethnicities, what have you? This is a simple phone call. It's 10 minutes. Talk to your vendors. Like, listen, I need you to bring me kind of more diverse contractors. The last stat I read about 2 years ago, most companies are still converting anywhere between 22 to 31% of their contractors into full-time roles. Without doing much of anything else, you have just diversified a potential pipeline of future talent that can naturally be integrated into your organization. So Those are just two quick things. That's not going to solve the diversity and inclusion problem, so nobody write me on LinkedIn. It's like, I did these two things, I don't see anything. But, I mean, these are just two small steps that you can do that doesn't take a lot of time. You're not going to get written up in Variety or the New York Times about this really ingenious program, but it will lead to results over time. So that's my two cents.
Tracy, could I add just one very quick tactic that I just learned last week? We hosted a Time's Up meeting, and one of the speakers, you know, had this really, really useful reminder to do a plus one times three analysis in your mind. So for any meeting that you're going into, think, can I bring a plus one, a junior person, right? If only to sit and observe and kind of take in the room and have that experience. And then can I introduce that person to three people, right? And just like on a very regular basis, and I've now put it in my calendar, so Sunday night, I have an entry that I will look at my calendar for the week and I will see which meetings I could bring the coordinator in my department or the manager in my department and have them start to integrate into seeing how senior executive teams work and talk and like just get to know and get familiar with that process. So plus one times three was to me just kind of genius.
No, you touch on something really important. We at Netflix, we had the privilege of having Sheryl Sandberg come speak to us earlier this year. And she talked about the challenges of that the Me Too movement has created in the sense of creating fear with men and their willingness to mentor women. And so I'm curious, has that been a topic of conversation? And this is open to any of you. And how have you facilitated that conversation? How have you maybe even encouraged the creative problem solving to think about? Because mentorship, you know, the difference of the two men who go out to play golf and that informal mentorship that happens, but then if you have the fear of going out for dinner and the perceptions, like how do you handle those conversations with male leaders?
So I've been an employment lawyer. That was my background. I was an employment lawyer for 17 years. And I have done a ton of employment law training sessions. And at the end, you just have your blowhards who are like, oh, okay, can't joke about that thing anymore. Oh, I guess I can't, you know. And then, oh, can't say anything. And then people get over it. And so I think kind of, and that's just a very small anecdote, but in the larger concept of Me Too, it's so disturbing to think of people reacting in that way. But I do think that it's momentary. It's that just knee-jerk reaction to like, oh my gosh, I can't do that anymore. Oh, it's like, you know, this whole thing's so radically different in how I engage with people. But I think that will normalize. And then when we think about each other as human individuals, we will be able to move past that initial knee-jerk reaction of like, oh my gosh, now I'm so afraid I don't know how to talk to a woman anymore or like comment on a blouse. I think that if we just help each other ease through this period, that we will then get into that long-term work and that long-term more sustainable growth that I think will come out of this Me Too and Time's Up movements.
So just to add to that, even for myself personally, the people that I go to the most for guidance and support are men. And I do think, I think it was Nadia, I'm not sure who was talking about the event that they're going to have later, about a whole series of workshops and other things of learning that they're going to provide to women in the space, which I think is amazing. But men have been the greatest source of learning for me on how to navigate differently, how to work differently, how to do this. So I love everything you just said. I think it's so critical that men find their voice in this process and find their voice with it, because I think it is men being the champion for women and many, many others that will really help to blend this. It is not inclusion if it doesn't include men. You know, we have to have them be part of this process and part of this dialogue. It's absolutely essential, like for me personally and for everybody that we talk to. I do just want to send one moment, though, on mentorship, which I think is actually one of the linchpins to actually solving what it is that we're trying to tackle here. Good, strong mentorship is what everybody is craving. And my advice to this room, and something small that you can do, is not only mentor somebody, and I love the one and three. Plus one times three, but really be thinking about who you could be mentoring and lending that out to. And even better, if it's somebody completely unlike you. if it's somebody completely different and unlike who you are, that you can lean into those differences and you can lean in and actually learn something for yourself in order to be empathetic and be a different kind of leader because you've learned from that experience as well.
Yeah, I agree with you. And mentorship doesn't mean that you're committing to 52 weeks, 2 to 3 hours talking with it. Mentorship may be that coffee date that you have with somebody before they're going into an interview and you're giving them that pep talk. And so I just encourage you to understand that mentorship comes in so many sizes and shapes, and it's something that we can give away for free. So with that, we're out of time. And I want to say now is your time to think, what is the commitment that you can make, whether it's mentorship, whether it's going back and starting your own employee resource group. Make that commitment because it will make a difference. Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy. Thank you, panelists. Awesome.